observed Steve Coleman in the Origami Vancast. Hello, world. This week we rejoin Jen in Pennsylvania coal country this October of 2020 to hear more about her getting onto medical marijuana after having the morphine pump removed from her body. Our discussion goes back to how we met on an online vaping forum, and the discussion evolves sort of into our philosophy on drugs and drug use, in particular in the medical context.
I had the pump taken out in 2018, but I was also still on, or put back on, oral opiate medications. So I was taking morphine tablets and tramadol at that point. So the morphine pump was removed, but I was still taking oral pain medications.
Right, right. Yeah.
Medical marijuana had just legalized in Pennsylvania, but there was no program yet.
There's no way for you to get any.
And you were telling me, this is a better life for you. And I was like, seriously? Like, I can't do any less than I'm already doing. How can this make it any better? And I just knew I had no more options. There were absolutely no more options for me to try. I had tried absolutely every medication, treatment, therapy, chiropractor, physical therapy, gyms, diets, exercises, surgeries, injections, medications, nothing had helped. I had exhausted everything the medical industry had to offer.
And right now you credit your recovery over the last how long?
Well, in 2018 was when I got, was in January 2018 was when I started making the reduction of the opiates, but that was not a, there was no recovery there. That was just, I'm getting off of these horrible medications, which felt horrible as well. In April of 2018, at the end of April, April 30th, I got my medical marijuana card in the mail. And I was able to start adding in medical marijuana to supplement from the dispensary. I had a friend give me some small, very low dose amount of THC that I could vape, a vape juice. It was a strawberry lemonade. And I was using that a little bit and a lot of CBD because I could get CBD readily.
Yeah.
So I was using a whole lot of CBD. It's federally legal.
Which I think
I blew through my CBD tolerance really fast going through opiate withdrawal, maybe. Like, because it worked at first, and then it just stopped working, and it could have just been, for opiate withdrawal, you need more than CBD. You do need CBD, it helps, but you need THC too, I think, or that was what I needed. And so once I got my medical marijuana card, I was able to push through and getting up. I've gotten off a total of 8 prescription medications now. Two asthma inhalers, because I don't need daily asthma inhalers anymore that I was taking. One was a steroid inhaler, which was making me gain weight.
Okay, so you were taking an inhaler and vaping, but not smoking.
Right. Right.
And now you are vaping, and you vape. Actually, this is great. You also vape your marijuana.
I vape my marijuana. Mm-hmm. I don't smoke anything.
And you vape nicotine.
I vape nicotine. That you make. I vape my own vape juice.
Right.
And I buy cartridges at the dispensary.
So what's your ratio on you these days on VG? You're high VG, aren't you?
I'm 70-30.
70, okay, yeah.
And 3.5 milligrams of nicotine.
And so 70% VG?
Yes.
Yes. And 3.5 milligrams of nicotine?
Yes.
And how much do you vape a day? These are like...
A lot.
Yeah,
many
milliliters? That's the question, right?
I probably fill this tank twice a day, okay. 2 to 3 times a day. So that's 5, 10, 15.
A lot.
Oh, there's 5 milliliter tank?
Is it a 3 or 5? No, this might be a 3. It's been so long since I bought it.
Yeah,
since
right.
Since I bought like, vape gear. Right. I don't remember even what the size tanks are. Because I do everything myself now. I don't even go into vape stores or know this. I forget the terminology now. It's just like, I know, I have a routine of this is what I do. This is my mod. These are my mods. These are my tanks. This is the juice I make. I only make one flavor.
Yeah, these are your coils. Or...
These are the only coils I use. This is the only flavor of vape. I don't try to make recipes. I have one flavor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's it. Huh. I get this one flavor. Yeah. I'm happy with it, and I'm content. I don't have any desire to mix for a bunch of other flavors because I don't want this to be more of a part of my life than it already is.
Yeah, right, right. Okay. Yeah. Hey, nice. Yeah.
So I don't.
That's certainly not the way. I used to have 369 flavors. I think.
I know. I have all these flavors sitting in there, and I had to have three mods with three different tanks on with three different flavors going. One was for all day. One was for when I want it. No. Why do I need that? That's ridiculous.
All this money going down.
All this money going down. I have one flavor, and I vape it. That's yeah. And it's a weird combination of stupid things that I've finally fallen into. It's a little cinnamon and sweet and sugary and cookie and a little bit of everything in there. Everything but the kitchen sink. I think I've everything but fruit flavors are in here. It works. And it, yeah, I used to have, I mean, I'd be constantly making crazy, crazy vape juice recipes. Has nothing to do with the conversation we're having.
Well, I don't know about that. You know, I mean, we met on a vaping channel, and I think that means that we were doing something different. You know, we're both really hardcore chronic pain patients.
We were just wide awake all the time. Needing someone to talk to.
I think that's a common thread that a lot of vapers and smokers share, you know.
Yes.
Which is not, you know, the thing about me is I'm an outsider to every culture.
So am
like, I. I'm an outsider. I never smoked, you know, so the vape culture definitely was primarily ex-smokers, you know, whenever I started. I mean, now you just send your kids to vape camp, or at least I do. But hold it in, Timmy.
Hold it in. You got this. You don't want to try to smoke a filterless Pall Mall like I did when I was 12.
No, right.
I didn't do that, luckily. I avoided it until the age of 20 somehow. I had no desire to smoke until stress.
See, I mean, since we're talking about that, you know, I smoked, I tried cigarettes a few times and unfiltered Camels, and I mean,
I thought it was disgusting. Household. I hated it.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah. When I went away to college, I was so glad I no longer have people constantly smoking around me. And then my junior year of college, I started smoking.
Really?
After I was almost diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah.
Which, yeah.
Ironic response.
Ironic response, but everyone else I knew smoked.
I mean, and I don't mean to be...
I know, it's a bad choice.
You and I have a relationship.
I know, it's a bad... I mean, yeah, really bad. And I've said this to a lot of people. Yeah. My mom gets cancer, and what do? I start smoking. She quits smoking, I start. But it was... Everybody in my family already smoked. Like, we're at the hospital. Everybody goes out for a cigarette break. All right, this actually is kind of helping do something. It makes me feel a little better. So it's really easy to get addicted in that situation.
Well, so that is my whole thing about drugs, and the whole way that I found my path through this stuff is, you know, the whole thing with drugs, no matter what drug you're doing, whatever you're doing it to feel better. And so that's why I don't think that you should jail drug users, because that's
doesn't seem to fix the problem.
People are using drugs to treat a condition, whether they're admitting it or not, you know, and I don't care if your drug is tea or coffee and you need it to get up every morning so that you can do your
job. I am addicted to iced tea. I cannot function without it.
So, yeah, and I mean, really, you don't, could you break that addiction?
If I wanted to, yes.
Let's say you're going to, all right, is it sweet tea?
Yes. It's very sweet.
Okay. So you're going to lose your leg to diabetes?
Yeah. I mean, if I'm going to lose my leg to diabetes, I'm giving up the iced tea. Yeah, if it's my leg or iced tea, the iced tea's going.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think it comes down to that. And I think, you know, I think sugar's a drug too.
Mm-hmm.
Tobacco.
That's a big thing here. Chew. People chew here. People smoke a lot here where I live.
And you know, dip is real common in the military.
Yeah.
But that is all, you know, your caffeine use, me with the espresso and everything. You can try and hide it and be fancy as you want around it and say that you're into the terpenes, you know, or whatever. Yeah, right.
It's special made, and it's, no matter what way you spin your, you know, special beer or your special coffee or your special weed, it's all a drug.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that's my thinking anyways, or at least it sounds like you agree with me on that pretty, and you've been through, you know, what is the heaviest drug you've been on? You've definitely been on fentanyl. What was the heaviest fentanyl you were on?
The heaviest fentanyl patch, I want to say it was 30 microgram dose.
25? 25. Is it, or, no,
I don't remember the doses of patches came in. I remember the last dose when I tapered off of them was 10.
Really?
Yes.
So it was like a little postage stamp thing?
Was it a gel patch?
Or did
it, it was not a gel patch.
Did it have fluid?
It was metal. And I had to, always had to have tape over it. And the other thing was the shower was a problem with the fentanyl patches. Because if you got too hot in the shower, you would get an overdose.
Do you remember my story from that?
Yes. And the same things would happen to me. And I would have to get that thing to stay on for 3 days and be able to shower, you're going to overdose at some point in that 3 days. If you get a shower that's above 98, above what?
It's like 72 degrees or something is what they say on the package.
But yeah. So I had to have the surgical tape wrapped around the patch all the time to keep it from coming off within the 3 days it was supposed to be on. Keep the shower temperature below a certain, just the things you have to do just to be on that patch.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Now, did you, now,
and it didn't work.
when you got put on fentanyl, did you know about the drug at all beforehand?
Nothing about it.
And what did your doctor say?
My doctor said that people get very addicted to it, and when I dispose of them, I should stick it to the wrapper and put it in the safe garbage because people would take it out of my garbage and they actually take the used ones and put them in their gums and suck on them. And I was like, ew, people do that. And she said, yes. She's like, so you have to be very careful about how you throw it away. I feel like she maybe should have given me more warning on what it would do to me, not what I should be worried about other people. Like, it's highly addictive. It felt really great at first, but then immediately I didn't feel great anymore. So then what did she do? She gave me a higher dose. And I felt really good for a little bit. And then not so good. And then she just gave me a higher dose. And this is just what she kept doing. And that's what all doctors just kept doing. Just the medication shuffle. We're going to switch it from this. Okay, now fentanyl patches didn't work. Okay, try these patches. Okay, they don't work. Let's go back to this tablet. Okay, now let's add this tablet to that tablet. Okay, now let's put in a pump. Now let's do this. Like, they'll just keep coming up with ideas. And even when I'm...
And every single visit costs...
This isn't one doctor. I can't say this was one doctor's fault. This was multiple. I've gone to so many.
A fault
doctors.
Is the wrong.
It's no one's fault. I can't blame the doctors. It's my own fault. I let them do it. I didn't say. At one point, it finally got to the point where I said I had to say no. But I let them do it. I didn't say no.
My philosophy on life is the whole personal responsibility thing. With this podcast, I'm trying to tell people what my experience has been, you know, as objectively as I can. Everybody has to understand that there are massive limitations with that, even no matter how smart you do or do not think that I am, you know. But the bottom line is, you know, some people have way too much respect for me is what I'm saying. And that's, it's appreciated. Yeah, thank you.
You helped me save my life.
Well,
you saved my life, quite literally.
Yeah.
If you hadn't found me in that vape form and convinced me there was a better way than what my doctors were telling me, and that there was a light at the end of this tunnel.
You know, you were on there for a while. We spoke for a while, and it wasn't like immediately that you came out and said that you were at home in chronic pain or that how severe you were or anything, but from the stuff that you were saying, you know, like... It was clear to me that you know, there's not very many people that I identify with pain on. And I mean, you know, everybody has experienced the pain that they have. And then people, you know, it's such a weird thing when you've been in that heavy duty. Which the only way, I guess, that we can really define it really is in the end what we've done to ourselves and what we've allowed other people to do to ourselves. Yeah. But I think the whole... What I'm getting at, or what I meant to ramble to, is the personal responsibility aspect. And that, you know, what goes into your mouth, no matter who told you to take it or whatever, it's still your responsibility.
It's still your responsibility.
If it's made by a shoddy North Korean company, that you know has radioactive materials in it or something, and you eat it, it's still your fault. And the same thing goes if that same shoddy company is here in America, and you believe their billions of dollars or whatever they've spent to develop their latest sham drug based on science that is looking at the wrong thing. Rant to be continued.
For listeners not familiar with chronic pain, I think it's pretty easy to listen to the conversation Jen and I are having and remain as divorced from the conditions that we are treating as we're describing these things. At least, you know, speaking for myself, I won't speak for Jen, but, you know, when you hear me talk about things and you hear a deadpan voice, or even when you hear emotion, you know, it requires a lot of restraint to tell a lot of these stories. That restraint is in part developed from, you know, the grind and the torment of chronic, persistent, unrelenting pain. And it's not something that you editorialize about when you tell a story. It's something that the person you're telling the story sees in your eyes. But you guys can't see my eyes and you can't see Jen's eyes. And if you did, you'd see that they are happy and that we are well. Or at least we're certainly, you know, headed on a path of wellness where we had not been for a long time. So I want to take this time here in the middle to thank you for listening, and thank you for keeping an open mind, because I know that this is very provocative material. I promise it's probably not going to get any less provocative. It's not what I'm going for, but it kind of just is what it is. So anyways, again, thank you for listening. You know, something that's a pretty sensitive topic to me, and I understand it's a sensitive topic for everybody because it involves public safety, and that is, you know, driving whenever you have the usage or the access to these drugs. And I think the first agreement that we all need to step back and make with each other as we move forward here, at least as I move forward in this discussion, I will treat you as an adult and your illness with respect. If you will treat me as an adult and treat my illness as a respect, with respect. I'm not asking for a free pass to go out on the roads and be in a dangerous condition, but I am asking for a pass to know what my condition is, and for the, you know, trust until proven otherwise, that I, you know, obey. And do what I say I will, and you know, stay sober on the road. And yeah, so I should have a paper in the show notes. That's the latest. Just came out on the intoxicating effects of marijuana, lasting something like 4 hours.
I've tried to avoid this for the first year, because avoid talking about it, because obviously being a nomad living in a van and cannabis being my drug, you know,
yeah.
Not only is it federally illegal,
it
supposedly, you know, impairs you. And I will say that it does impair you.
Excuse me.
And I personally don't drive on it within 4 hours of taking it. And I really am seeking to minimize much more than that. I mean, that's not my schedule or anything. I very rarely wait 4 hours and then drive. I, you know, would wait more like 8 or 12, or not have anything with THC in it till, you know, since the night before.
Which
if I'm gonna drive
how long it would take for it to get out of your system to be completely sober, but still in a blood test, you're still going to test positive.
Yeah. And you know what? So I would, now my doctor told me, you know, I don't know. I don't know what you're supposed to do, but I drove around for 18 months on fentanyl. I commuted in the nation's worst traffic, on the north side of Boston. And I drove, you know, an hour and 15 minutes one way.
Right.
Every day.
used to.
We were talking a little bit about driving, right? Like driving. I had this great picture in Germany that I took whenever I was over there. I was on my way between Dusseldorf and Frankfurt on the Autobahn. And my friend said, you know, hey, you got to get up. It's the Autobahn. You got to get up to 200 kilometers an hour. You know, it's like the. So I wanted to find a place where I could do that. It's like 90 or something. Anyway, I wanted to get a picture of me doing that. But of course, this is when I was on fentanyl. Mm-hmm. I did end up taking a picture going down the road at 200K, you know, down the Autobahn.
I even did that on fentanyl. Like, I barely was able to leave the house. But I didn't have a job. I mean, I can't imagine if I had a job to get up and go to, how I would have done that.
On fentanyl?
Yeah. I mean, when I had doctor's appointments, I had my dad driving me around. Like,
well,
that's
you're
how
not
horrible
supposed
I felt.
To be driving on fentanyl.
It wasn't even because I didn't feel like I should be driving. I just felt so uncomfortable. Oh. Like, I couldn't even steer the steering wheel.
How long were you on it?
Fentanyl. It's hard to say. It's hard to say at this point. Mm-hmm. There are so many.
Yeah.
And that was probably a year.
Yeah.
Or a part of a year, a good chunk of a year.
Yeah. Many, many months.
Building up to a dose and coming back down off a dose of fentanyl.
Uh-huh. And then that was fentanyl patches.
My first 50-mile commute from home to my job down in north of Boston through southern New Hampshire and northern Massachusetts. Down Route 3, that first commute off of fentanyl in the same traffic that I had been driving in for many years at that point was a different experience than I had remembered, and certainly it was a different experience than what I had on fentanyl. One of the biggest things I noticed were that the colors were much more vivid, the colors of the signs, the sounds and the smells of the traffic were much more prominent to me. And the whole experience, the first time that I was off of fentanyl, was substantially more frightening than the early times as I slowly built up to trying to function on that drug. It's certainly not something that I just slapped on and went about my day with.
So how much weed do you smoke a day?
I will go through 2 cartridges a week. That is 1 gram.
So you go through a gram of vape a week?
Yes.
Okay.
Sometimes a little more, depending.
What's the THC percentage on a cartridge?
So let's see. The ones I have right now that I'm sitting in front of,
like
me,
your pain cartridge.
My pain cartridges, right? The one I'm using right now is GG4, which is a well-known strain.
Does it work for you?
It works.
Okay.
This one, really? I have to go get the packet because this dispensary I went to doesn't label them as well. Hmm. If you can hand me, can you reach without moving your microphone, one of those black tubes, any one of the black ones? With a lot of long
label on. I
guess
I'll just wash my hands, too.
That's fine. So. The cartridges are inside them anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so this one's Scarlet Queen hybrid. This one, THCA 31.2, THC 49.9. So 50, 81 together.
Okay. So it's comparable to many concentrates.
Yes.
So of similar strength. So that would be, so I would say, you know, my usage has varied greatly. I use a gram every week, about that too now. Actually, trying to stretch it out longer.
But just in a very different way. I do this a lot.
Oh, yeah, right.
You see me hitting this a lot through the day.
Not really.
I thought when you saw me yesterday, I was like, he probably notices me taking a lot of hits off of this. But
that's just you feeling self-conscious.
In this next segment, Jen and I ponder the nature of pain, and we continue on with relevant details of transitioning to medical marijuana as Pennsylvania implemented their laws to both control opiates and implement medical marijuana.
Now they'd be like, okay, maybe you need to add a bolster you could give yourself. They gave me a remote control for it at one point. And I'm like, shouldn't I feel something when it releases extra medicine? And they said, yes, you should feel pain relief. And I said, I don't. They're like, well, you should.
So this is, here's another thing. I think this gets into the nature of pain, and I want to do a show on this, and hopefully I can find some people to talk to me about it that actually know, you know. So you would give yourself more. You would get an increase in morphine into your spine, and you didn't feel any.
I didn't feel anything.
Right. So I had, I don't know, remember if I told you this, but one time I had, you know, I had this pain in my left shoulder here that when I started seeing my massage therapist. If she would have told me she could have got rid of it, I would have just flat out went and financed a BMW right then to give to her.
Right.
Like, I just didn't think it was possible. It was unabating, unmodifiable. It was horrendous. And she started working on my serratus muscles, and it came loose. But anyway, in the first few years, like after about 3 years of having that pain, I went to my pain docs, and they injected me with lidocaine directly into, and they're like, the doctor's like, is it, am I there yet? You know, they inserted it deep enough. Now that the needle's inside, you know, I really can't tell.
I don't know how many layers of skin you're trying to go through or what point you're trying to get to. But some form of communication before we started the process would have been good. If you needed my interaction, you're the doctor.
Or, you know, it's a show, right? You don't get any rehearsing or
there's no
like that's
dress
straight
rehearsal.
Up performance. Yeah.
So when I went back to
even diminish it by saying that.
When I went to pain management and the last when I got my medical marijuana card, I kept going back until I got off all of the opiates. Then I no longer needed the pain management doctor other than to recertify me for my card.
Your pain management doctor will certify you for your card in Pennsylvania?
He was the first one who did it.
Really? Yes. This is interesting.
Well, I went to a new pain management doctor saying, I found a pain management doctor who gave out cards when the program became available in January.
Is this an actual MD doctor?
Yes, or
is this
an MD.
Really?
Okay, so in 2018, I found a new pain management doctor, number one. January 2018. I went to him. I said, these are the medications I am currently on. I want to start getting off of them because when I can, I am going to get my medical marijuana card. And he said, I am already licensed to give out my medical marijuana card. The program is not set up yet. Dispensaries are just starting to open. I will help you when I can give you it. You can already get it. You can schedule your appointment now. So I did. That was in January. So we cut my medications right there and then at that appointment drastically in a dangerous amount. I've told you about this before. It was a little too dangerous of a cut.
You and your doctor did?
Yes.
You did it with your doctor.
We did it with my doctor, but I wasn't prepared for the side effects of what was going to come with that medication cut.
Oh, well.
He wouldn't warn me. Now I know. But, you know, it comes with experience. He didn't know either. I was a brand new patient to him. He had no idea how addicted I was either. Or, you know, but he agreed to help me get on.
So what did you cut? Let's say what you cut. Do you mind?
No. So right off the bat, he said, you don't need tramadol anymore. Just stop taking it.
So how much tramadol were you taking to your
mind? I think it was 10 or 15 milligrams several times a day.
Three times a day?
Times a day, yeah. Right off the bat, he said, get rid of the tramadol. So just cut it. I cut it completely. We took
I don't know anybody that would disagree with those words.
Morphine down from
oral morphine.
Oral morphine down from 60 milligrams a day to 45 milligrams a day. And we removed Flexeril, the muscle relaxer.
How much of that do you remember?
I don't even remember.
Time a day or?
It was just like as much as, like, it was just all like multiple
however
times
much you
a
could
day.
Take to stay awake.
However much I could take.
Like the limit.
Whatever the limit was. Yeah.
It's a limit of consciousness.
So we eliminated those right off the bat.
Tell me the pharmacist thing again.
Okay, so at some point in the experience of getting on all these opiates, Pennsylvania started putting in laws that you could only get 30-day supply at a time. And as this started happening, pharmacies couldn't fill prescriptions. Mm-hmm. So Rite Aid, where I had normally gone, they'd be like, we don't have this in stock.
And
I'd be
like, your pain meds?
My pain med. Uh-huh. Well, when will you have it in stock? We don't know when it's coming in, and the first people who come in that day get it with their prescriptions. So I was like saying to my dad, I'm like, this is how medicine is supposed to work? And my dad was like, that's not right. So we kept going from pharmacy to pharmacy to pharmacy, and they're like, we don't have this in stock.
It's like a freaking bread line.
I don't remember. I think it was OxyContin. I think this was the OxyContin. And finally, we went to a small local pharmacy that I knew who the pharmacist was. And my dad said, I said to my dad, why don't we try, I'm not going to say the name of the farm. And we went over there, and she's like, oh, yeah, I get a delivery every day. I'll have it filled tomorrow. I'll deliver it to you. I'm like, I don't have to come pick it up. But she's like, nope, because she saw my dad was having to bring me. Mm-hmm. So she had her driver drop it off, and that's what I was doing from then on. Like that, now I had a way of getting, I didn't have to run around and try to wait in a bread line for my prescription medications anymore. But there was still this problem of I'm getting constant prescription medications. Like, so that went on for a while. So she was filling the medications for a long time, and she can't say anything. It's not her job to say, you shouldn't be on this medication, or this is getting to be an awful lot. She never said anything. Like, she filled them because the doctors kept writing them, and I was in a lot of pain, and she saw how bad I was. And then I told her I was getting my medical marijuana card, and I was going to start reducing my dosages, and she was going to start seeing reduced prescriptions coming through. And she said, okay, that's great. I think that's awesome. And she watched me go through the withdrawal process. She watched me go through every tapered dose, had to go through every, do you know insurance has to approve a lower dose of an opiate? So while I was tapering, okay, so I'm going from 45 milligrams of morphine to 30 milligrams next
oral
week.
Oral morphine.
Oral morphine next week. But in order to do that taper as planned, now insurance has to go through all the my doctor's office, my pharmacy, and my insurance company all have to pre-authorize a new dosage for me, even though it's lower.
Right, and then they got to get that ordered.
And done in time before my refill is up, in the 30 days.
Right.
Because, okay, you only
so that's like a part-time job right there, just to make that transition.
Just to make that happen, just to work on all this, get communicating between the offices. I had to communicate with the state of Pennsylvania. I was in contact with the Department of Health. Like, how do I get this? Like, my morphine tapers, I'm going to refill this prescription. I have no insurance won't approve it. I pay for it out of pocket then, won't get reimbursed. I'm going to have to pay $100. Like, I said, this is stopping me from getting on. You're actually holding up my process of getting off of this. And they said, so you don't think we should have to approve a lower dose? I'm like, why would you have to approve a lower dose? That seems a little ridiculous, don't you think? And they're like, yeah, kind of is. So I don't know if they still do that or not, but that was something early on in the medical marijuana program that I called the state health department and said, listen, if people are getting off of opiates, you can't keep making them going through all the red tape of getting lower doses of medication every time you want to change, drop your dose. Because every medication, every lower dose,
well, I mean,
stress.
Look, that right there is whether they mean to or not. That's a real impediment to people getting off. I mean, it's already hard enough
already
to get off of opiates already.
I was already committed. Everybody could see my commitment. My doctors, my pharmacist, my therapists, everybody knew. I was like, I don't want these anymore. This whole process, withdrawal was horrible. Every taper was horrible. And yeah, I couldn't do it all at once. I'm not capable of doing it all at once.
No, and that's
and every taper, I went through withdrawal over and over and over. The shakes, the sweats, the vomiting, the staying awake all night, the everything you see on TV, that's what it's like with every taper. I'm not going to lie. I went through it all. And I never thought anything illegal, ever.
You know, we recorded this episode, Jen and I, back in October, and here I am in the middle of winter in Ehrenberg, Arizona, where it's been 80 degrees for the last 5 days, and you know, I've had time to contemplate that time period, my time with Jen, and also you know, back at the actual time during fentanyl. So I started putting together the fentanyl travel stories in my mind. You know, they weren't long before I decided to. So these were tough time periods. And I think the conclusion that I'm really coming to now is that, you know, when I was driving on fentanyl, I was in so much pain. So first of all, I was in survival mode. All I could do is push as hard as I possibly could and hope to end up living at the end, and hope to support my family, keep food in the bowl and on the table, and a roof over our heads. So I pushed as hard as I could. I cared so little about my own life that I also simultaneously wasn't caring about the lives of those around me. And I don't just mean my immediate family, but I mean, you know, just my fellow Americans on the road, and even non-Americans as I traveled in other countries. And if I had that time period to do over again, I would do it over in a different way. You know, it's disturbing, and I appreciate you sticking with me and giving me the benefit of the doubt this far. That first day when I came off of fentanyl and I began to see that I was going to be able to live in that level of pain, you know, at least for a little bit, which I knew my mind would be able to take it for a while. But when I drove in that day and I saw those new colors and everything, and kind of for the first time, I think I had just gotten glasses, you know, turned 40, my eyes are getting bad. And I was able to see into the cars and see other people's faces, like, you know, hey, there's other humans in there. It's not just a blur as I whiz past them at 80 miles an hour. I tell these stories pretty deadpan, I guess, but they have a lot of intrinsic meaning to me. So I was coming around this area on Route 3 through Lowell, Massachusetts, southbound. And that's when I really started to notice, you know, as traffic really gets dense through there and points south. And really started to notice the vivid colors and just how much more animated the traffic was than it had been when I was on fentanyl. And then I started being flooded by all the other places I'd been, you know, that trip to Germany and to England. So those memories flooded me, you know, while I was driving, and I started then driving at the speed limit. Where I had been driving 80 in a 65, I started driving 65. I started getting over in the right-hand lane. So that time period was really transformative for me. Fentanyl was so abominably less tolerable in every way, so much more intoxicating, and offered no actual utility compared to an actual curative medication that I use to demonstrably increase my range of motion and flexibility. And that increase of range of motion and flexibility, while outwardly observable to other people, that is not the benefit, that is a side effect of whatever it is doing to me. And I look forward to telling you more about it. But what I want to throw in here too is that this show is not, it's never going to be medical advice. I'm not a doctor. I can't give you medical advice anyway. I can give you educated guesses and things to go check out and do for yourselves. And in coming shows, if there's interest, I'm going to try and set out a course on how to experiment on yourself with marijuana. I mean, so I just want to say in closing, you know, that I've got all this great audio with Jen's voice due to the generosity of her and her husband, Brian, allowing me, you know, in their home and recording their personal lives and taking up space where they're, you know, they're in a small town, and I have family from a small town as well, and you're used to your private life, and it's not something that you just normally share. So it was special of them to do that for me, and I thank them for their experience and for their ongoing support. Can feel the radiation.